the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
I think South Park is a little bit like The Simpsons in that it seems to have been around forever, but who takes much notice of it now? How relevant is it actually? But could it be that South Park has returned with a bang? Elaine Burke and Joe O'Shea are with us. So, Elaine, I'll let you try and describe what South Park has done in the first episode of season 27.
Yeah, 27 seasons of South Park so far. So yeah, it has been around for a long time. I haven't watched it myself since I was a teenager, and it still has that very teenage sense of humour to it. And when I was watching it, you did have a character of Saddam Hussein, who was very, like, even in the standard of the South Park universe, was very rudimentary drawn, and actually just had the face of Saddam Hussein and a slit across his mouth and flapping open so that he could speak. And he was in a relationship with Satan. And essentially, they have created the same character again, but replaced the flappy head with Donald Trump's head. Like, even the voice, I believe, is the same as the original Saddam Hussein voice. So, Trey Parker and Matts don't do a lot of the voices on South Park, so a lot of the voices do sound similar anyway. And this is the first episode of season 27. And what's really important in the context here is that South Park is coming from season 27 with a deal with Paramount to do 5 new seasons of Paramount of 10 episodes per season. And that deal is worth $1.5 billion. And instantly, out of the gates, they are insulting that parent company because they talk about what's been happening with Paramount recently. So Colbert, the Stephen Colbert show, has been cancelled by CBS, who also is part of the Paramount conglomerate. And it's all seemed to come down to this 60 Minutes interview that featured Kamala Harris that Trump took umbrage with and was staging a legal fight with Paramount about. Paramount settled, and a lot of people who work for Paramount or are involved in the Paramount, you know, media empire are really unhappy with that decision. And it's coming out. Colbert has been quite vocal about it as well. And now South Park has come out. Turns out that this animated show was produced within a week of airing, which is remarkable in and of itself. Now that I've learned that, I want to know more about it. So they can be very topical, very current. So they were able to bring this Paramount story into it.
But I wonder, Joe O'Shea, will the bosses now start telling them in future episodes no more attacking Donald Trump, because that could have commercial ramifications for your employer?
They could, and the guys waited. It was 3 days after they signed the deal for $1.5 billion to go with the show, which apparently the executives had no idea they were going to do. They can try to tell them to not to do it, but those guys, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, are probably the only people in mainstream media, so to speak, powerful people in mainstream media, who very likely will not listen to Trump, will not listen to the executives, will not listen to Paramount, their parent company. They'll just go ahead and do their thing.
And then will Paramount air it?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Because apparently Paramount executives were talking before this of actually immediately firing Stephen Colbert. There were stories in a number of US media outlets saying that because Stephen Colbert had started, you know, after he'd been told you're off the air next year, he started very, very much attacking Trump, which outraged the executives at Paramount CBS. And now they were talking about firing him. So they may be in a weird position where they're paying these guys $1.5 billion for 5 years of shows that they will not be able to show, because if they do, Donald Trump will come after them, and they've shown they will fold like cheap deck chairs. CBS and Paramount will fold for Trump. So it's a fascinating situation, because I don't think the South Park guys are going to back down.
But then, how much is Donald Trump going to dislike this, I wonder? Because I suppose what Elaine has outlined for us, the caricature Saddam Hussein getting into bed with Satan, has been repeated. But there's more than that, isn't there? Because I think they have taken, and I have to be very careful, just warn parents if they have young children listening and whatever, that I think they've taken inspiration, haven't they, from Stormy Daniels' description of Donald Trump's anatomy. And there is a scene at the end of the first episode of South Park, which is genuinely a jaw-dropper, given what it basically does with, oh, how am I going to say this? With Donald Trump's genitalia.
Yeah, microscopic, I think, is the word that's used. And that was really weird and very startling and scary. Donald Trump has gone crazy about this. The White House has gone crazy about this. They sent out a spokesperson, Taylor Rogers, who had to kind of put out this statement. He told Rolling Stone magazine, you know, that President Trump has delivered on more promises in just 6 months than any other president in our country. Said the usual stuff you get from Trump, and no fourth-rate show can derail President Trump's hot streak.
Oh, Streisand and effect. They've made people aware of the existence of the South Park show.
Exactly.
They've been ignoring it.
Exactly, and this is, and also what the creators of South Park, what they're doing is, it seems very calibrated to really, really enrage Trump, but also Trump's supporters, because South Park had got this reputation for the past 15 or 10 years anyway of being anti-woke, right? And actually, what the Americans call the liberal left, a lot of people hated South Park for what it had become, because they blamed it for the coarsening of US culture, for making it okay to be racist, anti-Semitic, and all of this kind of stuff, which Cartman the character was. But actually, Cartman is now in this new series. What's fascinating is Cartman is saying, oh, I can't outrage people anymore. There's no point in being anti-Semitic. There's no point in being, you know, nobody cares. Woke is dead, you know. And what it's actually doing is kind of showing up the hypocrisy of these people who are screaming about cancel culture for, you know, 5 years and are now busily going around cancelling anybody who doesn't agree with Trump.
Is it worth watching, Elaine?
Oh, well, I mean, I haven't watched an episode of South Park in a really long time. And when I heard that they were just kind of reinvigorating the Saddam joke again, I wasn't really that interested. But if you just want to see that end part out of morbid curiosity, you can go. They've kind of made it as a public service announcement. And it's not the flappy-headed animation. It's a deep fake AI version of Trump in that final segment. And it's shockingly realistic looking as well. In parts. If you go to hetrumpedus.com, you can see just that clip if you really, really want to. And I don't think it's worth
it. It was interesting. I mean, and it was funny in parts, although, you know, I can imagine how many people would be offended by it. But it all started with the episode with the loss of National Public Radio, which is an issue over there at the moment, the defunding of that, but also the bringing of Jesus into the school.
Yeah, Jesus has been a character in South Park since the start as well. So these are actually like the characters that I remember watching in this show. And they also have a character that came out in later stage seasons that's kind of running the school called PC Principal. And he's kind of changing tack. And now and Jesus is actually in the school because he says he has to be there because of a deal that's been made between, I think he frames it as a deal between Paramount and Trump. So like they're kind of skewering Trump and this Paramount deal all together in one episode. And the fact that they fitted that into probably what was 22 minutes of airtime is really quite impressive as well.
Listener says, Trump, like all snowflakes, has fallen into the Streisand effect trap. No one would be talking about South Park if he wasn't so offended by it.
I think that's totally what's happened here.
Okay, let's talk about other things. And Trump is related to this because I often think that Trump in The Apprentice, Elaine, was a bit like a sort of a more cerebral version, although not far more, of Hulk Hogan and WrestleMania and the rest of it. It all comes from the same type of dumbing down of American television throughout the 1990s and into the 21st century.
Now you're taking that stance of, you know, looking down upon world wrestling entertainment as a genre. And actually,
oh, I do look up to it.
I don't look up to it, but I was a big fan of it, and I absolutely make no secret of that. And it's not something I would ever could even call like a guilty pleasure or something like that. It's something that was hugely entertaining for me for many, many years. Now,
as a child, presumably.
No, like into my late teens even, I would have been watching it. And I know plenty of adults who are still big fans who make trips to WrestleMania and things like that. And I think what's really interesting about it is, as a showcase, it does things that are very different and have become part of TV now that we have this like reality TV construct being very common now. But it's this notion that, as far as I know, was born out of the wrestling arena, which is kayfabe. And it's like, we all know it's fake, but we're in on the act. And it's nearly like an immersive experience, like as an audience member, because you know it's staged. People used to come at wrestling fans and say, oh, you know it's staged. It's like, yeah, I know it's staged. Do you know that the TV shows
and then you stage things, Joe, like one stage, there's the thing, Trump, who was big into this, big mate of Vince McMahon, who owned the WWE, and they would be fake wrestling at the side of the stage and all this sort of nonsense. And isn't McMahon's wife now one of his ministers in government?
Yeah. There's a brilliant documentary on Netflix called Mr. McMahon. Yeah. And it really, really well worth watching. It's about Vince McMahon. And even if you know nothing about wrestling, what it really is about is corruption. It's about the kind of darkness. Yeah. The darkness at the heart of American culture, really.
And also the mistreatment of an awful lot of the fighters as well.
And that's Hulk Hogan, who died, who really a lot of people didn't like, for one of the reasons
that... Terry Bollea, that was his real name.
Terry Bollea, his real name. He was a guy from Florida. Now, he's a self-made man in many ways, although steroids helped quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
But what he did was, in the 80s, when he was the biggest star in World War, in wrestling, by a mile, the other wrestlers were trying to organise a union so that they could get paid properly, they could get health benefits. Like, wrestlers were being killed by the injuries they were getting. It's a really, it's a...
All in the name of entertainment,
In entertainment. Yeah, they were like ancient, they were gladiators basically from ancient Rome, but just thrown in there. And Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, he basically ratted on the efforts behind the scenes of this kind of union organising. He went to Vince McMahon and he told him what was going on, and he informed basically on his colleagues, and he basically busted the union. He basically stopped them. So there's a lot of wrestlers, there's a lot of wrestling fans, and there's a lot of people in general who weren't exactly, saddened that much to hear about the death of Terry Bollea, Hulk Hogan, during the week.
There's also a terrific documentary about Hulk Hogan and the legal action he took against Gawker, the website, which published details of an intimate tape with Hogan and the wife of one of his best friends. It's called Nobody Speaks, Trials of the Free Press, and that's really interesting. And it was Peter Thiel, who now, of course, is so close to Trump, who was the one who funded Lane, wasn't it, the legal action to take Gawker down.
Yes, Peter Thiel was instrumental in that. He kind of backed Hogan's case, and Hogan was awarded over $100 million in damages. It bankrupted the website, and I think he got maybe $30 million of that awarded in the end. And it's really interesting that you see these overlaps between this form of media culture that's often sneered at and laughed at and looked upon as it's, appreciated by people who are morons, when actually that empire has its fingers in many pies. And you've got now Linda McMahon now in government with Trump. Trump was, gained a lot of popularity by appearances in the World Wrestling Entertainment arenas. And you also have this tech billionaire being involved in backing a wrestler's case against a gossip website because he had a grudge against that website. Now, his grudge against that website was to do with being outed by it, which is obviously a horrible thing to do, and no website should be outing people. But Peter Thiel's power as a billionaire really came into light because of that Gawker case. That was in the early days of me being a tech journalist, was covering that case. And my awareness of Peter Thiel was ramped up in that case. And you can then become aware of Peter Thiel's hand in many, many things since then as a billionaire. He's not a household name like your Musks and your Zuckerbergs, but he is immensely powerful. And part of his power is being a bit more shadowy and less known about it.
Absolutely. He's one of the most sinister and interesting figures around at present. Picks of the week. Joe, what are you going for, please?
Well, Apple TV continue to make shows, dramas, just for me, actually. Making them for me, right? Because there's one coming up, and I am very excited about this. It's Chief of War. It's starting on Friday on Apple TV. And it's Jason Momoa, who people will know as a sort of like almost a cartoon character himself in some of the roles that he does from the Minecraft movie recently. But Jason Momoa, this is a passion project for him. He has Hawaiian heritage. And Chief of War is a 9-part historical drama. Kind of along, a bit like Shogun. I'm getting Shogun vibes off this, right? And basically, it's set in the turn of the 19th century in Hawaii. The four major kingdoms of the Hawaiian Islands are in a state of war. Jason Momoa plays this warrior chief who comes back to try and unite the people because what they can see is the British Navy offshore preparing to colonize the islands. So basically, this is an epic, epic historical drama with loads of blood and loads of fighting, of war and lots of people screaming at each other, and I'm really looking forward to it. Chief of War, Apple TV, Friday.
What's your pick, Elaine?
So it actually started last night, but because of the beauty of streaming media, by the end of this week it will all be available on demand on Channel 4's platform, and it continues tonight, Wednesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. And across those four episodes you have what's called Operation Dark Phone Murder by Text, and it's a documentary from the makers of 24 Hours in Police Custody, and it's looking at this operation that involved law enforcement in the UK and also other organisations across Europe, where they actually managed to get access to EncroChat, which was this service being used by gangs to communicate through specially encrypted phones and communications platforms. And they had 74 days of access in 2020 to all of the messages from various criminals. Now, at the start, they don't know who these people are because even on that service, their names are disguised. But the criminals, because they felt protected in that space, speak quite openly about things that they are planning to do, drug deals and even like threats to cause harm and to murder people, create acid attacks and things like that. And one of them even at one point sends a selfie of himself, because this is their version of WhatsApp essentially, sends a selfie of himself to someone else, and immediately they start to thread things together and figure out who they are from that one selfie and piecing together and you know, start to prevent some of these things from happening. It's a fascinating story. I'd love to know more about how they got access to EncroChat. They don't cover that too much, and I understand why they don't want to reveal their secrets there. But just, yeah, it's a really compelling story. There's some reconstructions in it that are kind of cheesy to watch and a little bit glamorizing of these gang members. But I think the story itself is compelling. It will keep you stuck in.
And that's on Channel 4, or you can catch up with it on the Channel 4 player. Thank you very much, Elaine Burke and Joe O'Shea.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.